Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, goal!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be here. Obviously new dig, so we're trying to add a new program here. If you like it, let us know in the comments and, you know, we could get rid of that annoying duck logo right above me and put ours, so. We're just trying out for now, but let us know what you think. Also, you have Madison.
Yeah, back from a little holiday and ready to talk about some AC Milan.
Miami hat bought on holiday, I presume?
Yes.
Respect.
Of course.
Yeah, great stuff. I'll open up with a question then. Would the duck logo have been more or less useful than Zlatan up front yesterday?
Well, the duck logo can't be offside, so it'll be more useful.
It could be, but at least it would sometimes be onside by virtue of it not moving. All right, so where do we start? It seems to be a theme, doesn't it? Whenever AJ wakes up at 3:30 in the morning for these games, it never goes well. It never seems to go well anyway. I predicted a 2-0 win. I'm never really confident going into games, but I predicted a 2-0 win. I think we all predicted a win last week. Against the Samp side that are fighting for nothing. They've been either 10th or 11th since the 12th game of the season. Was expecting them to, you know, perhaps be a bit plucky, a bit hard to break down because Ranieri sides are like that. Damn, we just suck at home, don't we? Like, we were really struggling. We now have 15 less points at home than we do away from home. Or 14, sorry, I think it is after yesterday's draw. But that is the biggest difference in Europe's top five leagues. In terms of
we haven't won a home game in the league in our last four, and in all comps it's 7 straight without a win at home. So I don't know why the only team that's intimidated by the San Siro is Milan. Apparently, normally you know when the visitor comes in, they're the ones who are like, oh, it's San Siro, big deal. But it seems like it's only us that freak out there, and there's not even fans to jeer them. So I don't really know what the deal is. Why we can't get a win at home? I mean. It's nice to be able to go away and do a job because that's typically the hard thing to do, but we should be able to do the job on both ends. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I was expecting a little more energy from the team given the fact that some of the players had 10-day rest, but the first, like, 85 minutes, we looked like shit. They actually put me to sleep for about 20 minutes of it, and... The last 5 minutes and then the last 10 minutes, we looked great. We were pressing. We tried to score. We scored. Kessié hit the post. And it seems like we only start playing well after we score. So when we score early, we're playing well for the rest of the game. When we score in the 85th minute, we're only playing well for the next 5 minutes plus stoppage time. So we just keep on shooting ourselves in the foot and hopefully – I mean, we're 4 points out of fifth place. So hopefully we can, or 4 points above fifth.
It's interesting. We talked about a few times actually on this podcast how we never seem to get out of first gear. And we've always touted that as a good thing. You know, like we don't have to worry about trying to push harder. You know, we're still performing. But now it's like, maybe that's a detriment. You know, we're not able to get out of first gear until, like you said, we scored. And that took us 87 minutes, something like that, 88 minutes.
Yeah,
we're like a Ford Fiesta accelerating on the expressway, man. We just can't go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It takes an hour to get up to pace, and by then it's too late. You've already lost the race. So, I mean, I think that's a perfect analogy because, like I said, we gave away a goal. You know, it's weird because I think up to that point of when we conceded, our defense was probably the best aspect of our game. You know, Gigi had a big save. Tomori looked great. Kjaer looked great. It was our fullbacks that suffered. And, you know, I'm not going to slate Salamakers. He was playing out of position, even though he used to play there for Anderlecht. He has been a right winger for us the whole season. So that's what he's used to. Teo should be good enough, but he wasn't. And he hasn't been for a few weeks. I don't know what's going on. And it's probably his fault that we drew that game. You know, obviously overall performance, bad. But we did enough in those last 10 minutes to get away with the win if we didn't give that ball away there. So I don't know. It's frustrating. It's strange. We didn't look good.
No, we didn't. We didn't. It was annoying for a number of reasons. I think the first thing, I know what you're saying, like Teo was part of the reason that we drew that game. You can see it was the main reason or whatever, but I've seen a lot of people, and I said this in a tweet, there seems to be a split among people who are saying it's purely to blame and people who are saying it's Teo to blame. It's both, you know. Like, let's be honest, it was bizarre selection. The tactics, in my opinion, were naive, but then also he can't account, Pierre can't account for individual errors like that. You know, this is supposedly one of the top fullbacks in the league, and he's just passed the ball straight to one of the most storied centre forwards in the league, and he gives him an easy-ish chance to make it 1-0. It was bad. Like, lack of intensity, I think, is perhaps sometimes justifiable, or rather targeted energy, but in this sense it didn't feel right. You know, I think Sampdoria came with a game plan. We knew they were going to play 4-4-2, and I thought, oh, that's excellent, we'll have a run them in the midfield. Hakan's going to have a field day playing between the two lines, and I thought we'd find it a lot easier than what we ended up doing. But I think starting right off the bat, the selection was wrong. He should have played Kalulu at right back and Salamakis as a winger. I don't think Salamakis had a disastrous game, and I thought he was a bit unlucky to be the one to be subbed off, to be honest. But at the same time, by playing two more attacking presences on the right side, Sampdoria's only threat was Damsgaard, and he plays on the left wing. So I didn't really get the thinking behind that, to be honest. And I understand why he didn't play Dalot, because Dalot played 90 minutes three times during the international break at the under-21 Euros, so fair enough, he had to rest up. And then, yeah, it's just when we got, I mean, getting in at half time at 0-0 was honestly a bit of a relief for us, because up until the 35-minute mark, we were getting properly dominated. Thorsby had that header from Kandreva free kick that GGO managed to strong hand away. That was actually a good save. He had a save from, oh, I can't remember who it was, who cut in from the right, and he tipped that one over the bar. We just looked at sixes and seven. We kind of were bending but not breaking. You know, we were allowing them to cross the ball into dangerous areas, but just about getting away with it every time. Last 10 minutes of the first half, we were much better. So I thought we'll come out strong second half and get the result that we all want. But we did what we've done so many times and completely lapse in the first 10 minutes after the break. That got them their goal. And then history shows this season, whenever we go a goal down, we don't win the game. So that was it. We were fighting an uphill battle. One thing that really, really pisses me off looking back at it is that, you know, they went down to 10 men with half an hour to go, and it took us 27 minutes to break them down. 27 minutes until Hauge got that goal. And even then, it came from a bit of a weird mistake, fluke type thing, where he managed to just curl it around everyone. It was a tidy finish, to be honest.
Yeah, but like, those are all, that's how he scores all of his goals, is like almost in that exact spot or that part of the field, you know.
Yeah, he's always coming from the left side.
Trademark finish. I just mean it was weird in the sense that the keeper was sort of stranded, and it was Colley who made he tried to make a last ditch sort of block on the line, but he was wrong footed, so it just ended up looking like a really nice finish, which it was. But that was all we managed. We didn't really manage anything else. Kessié hit the post, and it was deflected, so I don't really blame him for missing that particular opportunity. Calhanoglu had a late shot that was saved, but it all just felt like too little too late. And honestly, when the full-time whistle blew, I didn't feel like perhaps Hellas and the Parma games, where we'd absolutely rinsed them. I thought on another day we'd have won that game. I honestly thought it was a fair 1-1 draw. And that is a real worry when this team needs to pick up probably five more wins at least to get into the top four. This is one of the games that you would put down as, you know, probably in the top two of the easiest games that we've got in the remaining fixtures. And we didn't do the job. So then you start thinking, where do we go from here? But yeah, performance-wise, I don't really fault Donnarumma, to be totally honest with you. The goal, you know, he's not going to be rooted to the line. It was actually a pretty nice measured finish from Quagliarella. So I don't really fault him too much. Same with Salamakis, Kiya Tomori, but Teo, I don't know what's going on with him, but I don't like it. He seems a shadow of the player that he was for us when he was banging form. He seems to still want to get forward, but now every time he makes those darting runs, he never, ever makes the right decision. And then you add that in with the lapses in concentration. And he's become a bit of a liability, really, and that's difficult.
Yeah, Gigio didn't do anything wrong in conceding that. In fact, I think he had a good game overall. He made some big saves in the first half as well. Like you said, you're not going to be rooted to your line always, especially when you're pushing forward like that. You know, it's natural. Goalkeepers drift a bit more out. He was still in the box. I mean, it wasn't like he was 20 yards out or anything, but it's just that the perfect range for that shot was exactly where he received the ball to take a chip like that. It was always going to go over Donnarumma. It was always going to be in. There was no contention at all. So the only person you could blame for that is Teo. I mean, people could blame Kessié for not getting the pass, but like, it was behind him. He wasn't looking there. He wasn't expecting it, nor should he have. That's not a pass I would have made. I mean, there was only one Sampdoria player in that area, and it was who got the ball. So I don't know why we were doing that. It's not like he was under pressure to make a pass. He could have made one of those 40-yard runs he loves to do. He could have passed up forward to whoever was on the wing at the time. You know, he could have done anything else. So I don't know what his thinking is. Lately, he's been making the wrong decision just about every single chance he gets. So I don't know what's going on there, but someone needs to sit him down and talk to him. Like, look, no one on this team is irreplaceable, including you, you know, and you got to step up, get back to what you were doing, or you're going to lose your spot. Even if that was not a better player, like, he's not making those passes. He's not making those mistakes. You know, he's
actually having good games at left back.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, he could do a job. So he needs to know that his job's at risk and step up.
Yeah. I was looking at the goal. I've done a tactical analysis of the game on the website, so go and check that out. It's on the match section. As part of it, I was looking at what Teo would have seen when he made that daft pass. Now, probably 5 yards to 10 yards to his right as he's on the ball is Tomori, stood basically in his own postcode. Like, he could have easily just played the ball back to him. I really don't know what he saw to make the pass that he did. But also, he had the time to switch it onto his left foot if needed. And I know it's easier said than done to just ping a pass, but Castillejo was stood on his own on the right wing, like on his own. He just had to put it on his left foot, dink it over two players and get it to Samu. But either way, the easy balls back to Tomori was there if needed. The press wasn't that intense. I'm just so surprised at that. But then you think, well, Teo had a really bad back pass to Donnarumma in that game where Romagnoli cleared it off the line against Udinese. You know, that was a hospital pass. That was really bad. He's had some bad individual games, you know, some bad errors. And those do need rectifying. I wonder how much he's playing into his head with, like, he keeps getting snubbed by France. And I think that's really pissing him off. And... you know, say what you want, and I don't want to delve too much into it, but I guess stuff away from the field as well can probably impact your mindset and stuff. Not that it should, these are professional athletes, but it does. You wonder, are there other factors that are contributing to what we're seeing from Mayo? But I back him to come good again. You know, like the rest of the team, he seems to be in an ebb of form, and we've seen what they're capable of, so it feels like the only way is up. Like, he can't get worse. So we just got to hope
he could get worse.
Yeah, if he keeps us up, how. He's getting worse.
But they're also human, you know. They're professional athletes, but they're also human. Everyone has ups and downs. You just expect them to always be on their up, you know.
Yeah, but if he wants to get called up to the national team, like, if that's holding him down, you got to show a little bit more, you know. If you want to be on the national team squad, especially one like France, who just won the World Cup, you got to do better. You got to do a lot better, especially with a coach who's made it clear he doesn't like you. So maybe that's holding him down, but, like, use that as motivation. Don't let it hurt your club performance where you're actually good. So I don't know. It confuses me. I don't get it.
No, I think he will come good. The talent's obviously there. I feel like so much of it, and it shouldn't be like this, but we just look a better team when Teo Rebic start down the left. You can say what you want about Rebic's performances this season, but he did have a good spell. It isn't even really about that. The chemistry that Teo and Rebic have on the left side is so important. They just understand each other so well in terms of 1-2s, in terms of one of them making the running behind at the right time. And it isn't there with anybody else, especially when you've got a ghost playing on the left wing like we did. So we might as well talk about Krunic's performance. He did nothing. That's about it. End of discussion. Don't see what he was thinking. Let's say Rebic isn't fit enough to start the game, which I think was the case. He'd just come back from a hip problem. Probably didn't want to re-aggravate it. He might have been 30 minutes fit. How could... What's he got to do to get a start? What has he got to do to get a start?
I don't know what is going on with him. I think we put something out there that at the end of the season they're going to meet with his representatives and see what his future looks like. So I don't know if maybe he's just immature during training, or he's not, you know, during training he's not showing what he can really do, and they're not the player that he thought that he was. But I feel like his goal to minutes ratio has got to be great.
Yeah, I think it is.
They're good. Just not giving him chances, and if we're not going to redeem any of our loan players that are taking his spot, then why aren't we playing him? You know, yeah. Just seems better for the future of the team. So there's just stuff going on that we don't know about.
I think a lot of it's just needing rest. You know, he played that full Norwegian season before coming to us anyway. So, and now he's got, like, I think this was his 400th minute in the league since joining us. And I mean, he's had a decent amount of minutes. They're just rarely are they, you know, in large chunks of the game. But I don't know. I mean, he's obviously doing better than Krunic. He scored the goal. I still would have started Rebic. I think it's weird that we even appealed the suspension. Yeah. If we're not going to start him. Like, regardless of fitness, yeah. If he's unfit to start, then why are we even appealing the suspension? Just give him another rest. Who cares?
Dude, when I looked at that starting 11, I was so confused.
Yeah, extremely. And I thought maybe it was because I woke up at 3:20 in the morning, and I was like, I'm just reading this wrong. But no, that's what we fielded. It was very strange.
Yeah. Krunic, if you look at the heat map, Krunic wasn't where he should have been for the system to work, and I don't think he had that many touches of the ball, to be totally honest with you.
Because he's a midfielder, and we've been trying to force him to become a winger, which he's not, and he's not even a great midfielder. So I don't know what we're trying to change up. You know, I mean, I think we're living off that one free kick he scored, and we're just like, oh, he'll do something again, like he'll do it again. But it doesn't make any sense to me. And you know, I think he has a role in the team, and I think that's the role we should use him in. But why are we trying to change the role? You know, he's a midfielder. Play him in the midfield. Don't throw him on the wing when we have wingers on the bench. Like, we have Liao. We have Rebic, who was fit enough to play. We had Haugerts. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. No. That's my biggest criticism of Pioli, has always been his substitutions. So now his lineup is apparently a part of it as well. I don't know. I think he got the subs wrong as well, you know, because, like, obviously JPH, that was the right sub. Rebic coming on, right sub. But to bring Salamakers off, that was wrong. I would have brought Castillejo off for Kalulu and moved Salamakers up, and then just brought in the other two for Çalhanoğlu and Krunic. That's what I would have done. I think Tonali was the right call for Bennacer. Giving Bennacer the start was wise. See what he could do. Obviously, he's not back to 100%, so Tonali takes over. I get that. But yeah, that's my main criticism. I feel like he gets the substitutions wrong pretty often now.
Yeah.
He's probably overthinking everything, and he's probably scared that we're going to get out of the top four. So he's nervous about what he's doing. You know,
that's fair. Especially against a side coach by Ranieri, who's like known to be a tinkerer, and seeing he had no players on international duty. Like, he did have time to come up with a plan against us, but...
But also, why start a fucking weird-ass lineup if you want to stay in the top four?
Right. You know? Stick to what's been working. You know, like, we're obviously at a pivotal point. We're struggling. Why are we going to change it? You know, just fix what needs to work.
That could also be why Ibra was offside so much, was because the players who were giving him the ball were passing it late.
On my shirt.
He was bad. Like, Ibra's heat map was basically the exact same as Çalhanoğlu's and Rebic's, which implies that they were... sorry, not Rebic, Krunic, which implies they were all just occupying that same space, like just left of centre around the edge of the 18-yard box. That ain't going to work. We need touches in the box. We need touches in dangerous areas. The stat for touches in dangerous areas, I presume, means in the final third. But Ibra had 6 during the full game, and Rebic came off the bench and had 7. So it just shows he was getting into much better areas. We essentially played 2 up front when he came on, and I thought that worked really well. It's good to know that that is something we can do. But again, you got to remember the last 30 minutes, we played against 10 men. Yes, we had more of the ball. We created more chances. But yeah, and I thought I know what you said about Sampdoria not having any players on international duty, but they actually did. They had quite a few on international duty.
I just took a guess.
It's a fair point, but I think they had double figures. And I thought that fatigue would play into it in that way, and that our depth would show on the bench, because we had Rebic to bring on, we had Hauger, we had Tonali. We had all these players to bring on, and I thought that would be important. And it was. When Tonali and Rebic came on, it was an injection that we needed. But also, you'd hope it would be against 10 men. You know, we should have been dominating them when it was 11v11, but we weren't. And then it took us 27 minutes to score against 10 men. So, I'm pretty worried about the way this game is sliding, to be totally honest with you. I mean, we've got 2, maybe 3 winnable games coming up in a row now, but then you just think, I can't see beyond the next game, and just like, please win this, otherwise we are.
I get the 10-man argument, but at the same time, it's like, look who came off. Adrian Silva in the midfield. Yeah, that's an important position, but they have a 4-man back line. They're playing a 4-4-2, so it's not like they didn't have numbers to beat us still. You know, they had plenty of people, and you see the argument is like, you know, Chelsea had a red card early on and conceded 5 to West Brom. Like, that's really bad, and it was Thiago Silva, defender, but they subbed on another defender, you know, and they took off an attacker. So it's not like, I don't know, it's not like your defense gets that much weaker when you lose that player, because the substitution makes up for it.
No, but if we want a challenge for the title, then it should hurt them that much. You know,
I mean, yeah, we should be pushing have had regardless. So much more space. We should have done more when they had 11 man, let alone.
So 10. I have a question for you guys. Given Ibra's second half of the season form, would you re-sign him next season? Or do you think he's been hurting us more than he's been helping us?
I think I would have him, but I would seriously consider, and now this sounds daft because he scored 15 goals in 16 league games. That's pretty good still. That's a good return, you know.
For sure.
He has scored important goals. Did a lot of it in the first half of the season, as we know. I personally think he's a little bit afraid of his own body now. I think he's, although going away on international duty suggests otherwise, I think he knows now that his body has its limitations, and hopefully that forces him to adapt a little bit. I would give him a year. I wouldn't do it at the same salary, because I think it sets a dangerous precedent then. You know, and I would potentially say to him, there's going to be games where you're not going to start, and you're going to have to be okay with that. You know, he probably does start all the important games because he's a goal scorer, he's a winner, he imparts a certain mentality. He drags the team with him more often than not. But if we are going to bring in a centre-forward in the summer, you would think that it would be a good name, and they're not going to be happy just sitting on the bench at the start of every game. So you might just have to rotate it a bit and see how it goes. If it was like a Vlahovic or something, that would be perfect because he's really similar to Zlatan. So our system won't have to change much, but we've got, you know, a young guy learning from his idol, literally his idol, but also someone who can provide Ibra with a chance to manage his workload a bit more. So
I've heard a lot of people being like, oh, Zlatan's my idol. Like, Leao said that too, and he hasn't improved shit. So it's like, I don't know. I don't know how much that
Zlatan
really
did, or Leao was playing well at the beginning of the season, but then something also changed.
Yeah, maybe they all got tired of Zlatan yelling at them when he's not producing either. I don't know. Just a thought.
I mean, the dude's just, I feel like in every game, he's just been offsides, you know, and it's just this week. And it's because,
I think,
like Oliver said, he's trying to learn how to play without injuring himself, and he's trying to limit how much he's moving on the field. Mm-hmm. And you don't want your striker limiting how much they're moving on the field.
Well, and that's why, you know, Ollie mentioned this a few weeks back, and I've agreed with it, and I think that's the way to go forward. But 3-5-2 or something else, or I don't know, just 2 strikers up top. Like, I think that's what we got to do.
Who do you play as a second striker?
Well, that's what that, the market's well, for the summer. You know, if we're going to get another person, we're going to renew him, which it sounds like we are.
Yeah, but we can't finish. I don't think we can finish in the top four this year having Ibra be offsides that much.
Well, then have Liao up top with him, Hakan in the hole, and do three men behind that with Bennacer, Tonali, Kessier, and then the normal back line, back four.
Well,
and then,
I think if
and then you get rid of Castillo too. That's almost like solving two problems. So who knows?
You know, I'm just saying if we don't finish in the top four, my predictions at the beginning of the season were correct.
I think if we don't finish in the top four, Pioli loses his job. I think that's where we're at now. Because
1,000%.
It will have constituted, if we miss out on a top four, it will mean we've had a really bad second half of the season. And everybody who said, look what he did when he took over at Inter and how it all fell apart, will have been right. You know, and it's hard to come back from that. But that's probably a discussion for down the line.
Purely the stabilizer. Like, he makes his team stable. And that's what he did. He stabilized us from this mess that we had under Gianpaolo. And we found a system that worked for us. And we stuck to it. The problem is, he doesn't adapt. This is a system that works. This is what we're doing. And as the season goes on, people figure out how to do it. Like you said, we got figured out by multiple teams that are in the same formation. And now other teams that run different ones are able to adapt to that. And they're figuring us out. And that's why we've had such an abysmal second half of the season so far, is because people know what we're doing and we're not changing it.
Yeah. Gianpaolo fucked up this team in only six games.
I think he had seven, but yeah.
Seven games. So
111 days. 111 days he managed to do it. It was the friendly that we drew 0-0, the last friendly against Cesena, I think, before the season. And everyone was like, hang on, we're just passing to Suso and getting him to shoot. This is going to work. And yeah, we realized then that we...
Would you take Suso back if it meant getting rid of Castillejo?
No.
No.
Probably not. Well, I wouldn't be what do you mean, like swap one for the other?
Yeah, just a straight swap.
Suso's obviously better than Castillejo. And I also think that if Suso was crossing to Ibra, he'd probably fare a bit better, to be honest. At least he'd have someone to aim at that wasn't
Piontek. Yeah, when his crosses are on target.
His crosses were on target more often than not. It was just we didn't have anyone there to receive them.
I don't know, man. They were a little... We'll never know because he never had a striker to cross to.
Right.
He was crossing to a plank.
Nothing. You just kind of cross and pray.
Throwing the ball in there and hoping something happens.
Yeah.
We were talking on the Discord, and I'll put the link to it in the description, about the idea of a 3-5-2. Pretty much had to generally agree that if we're going to do something like that now, we might as well wait until the end of the season to do it. Because I think if we try and implement it now at such a crucial point of the season, if it looks bad in one game, it could ruin everything. You know, that's why I would say if we are going to do it, then yeah, we need to commit to doing it in the summer. There's nothing to suggest that we are going to switch to playing a 3-5-2, by the way. This is just ideas from fans and stuff. But on paper, I think it makes a lot of sense because you find a role for Kier, Tomori and Romagnoli, because I think Romagnoli would look better in a back three, be more sheltered. Teo plays as a wing back, which is good because he doesn't have to worry as much about tracking back and he can focus more on going forward like Hakimi does for Inter. You can play the three in midfield that AJ mentioned, and you can play like Ibra and Rebic, Ibra and Liao. Or if we manage to get another striker, even if we manage to keep Mandzukic for another year because he shows us something, we could play Mandzukic and Rebic up front. And that's what they've done for the Croatian national team, so who knows, maybe that might work. And then at wing back, you've got choice, Salamakers, Calabria, whoever you fancy there. But the strength of the 3-5-2, and if you were to say who are the two best teams in terms of their having a tactical identity in the league, you would probably say Inter and Atalanta. You know, Inter press well and they counter very fast. Atalanta do the same. They absolutely schooled us at San Siro earlier this year, even. And they both play three at the back, as we've talked about many a time. But the strength of the press is always in numbers. So you're pressing with two from the front, you're pressing with your wing back, you're pressing with three in midfield, and you've got three men at the back to cover in case they breach the press. It's just a game of numbers, and that's why I think it works so well. And you've got the fluidity then of being able to play 3-4-1-2 if that's what the game dictates, and you push Hakan a bit further up. It even gives players like let's say we don't sell Krunic, or let's say we sell him and we bring Pobega back and he's more used to being box-to-box than playing deeper. It even gives players like that a role because they would look better in a midfield three. And there's also an argument that you get the best out of Tonali by doing that because that's what he did at Brescia. He played in the middle of a midfield three and he had the cover, he had the shielding. He could dictate play because he had two men covering him. And there's a lot of arguments for it working on paper. I'm not saying it would work. We might do it now and it's an absolute disaster for whatever reason. But I think we've seen with coaches in this league, and perhaps we've seen with Pioli as well, you adapt to survive, you know. You kill or be killed, and we're at risk of stagnating pretty badly here. If in the first half of the season, there's a good article which I wrote up earlier. It was a thread on Twitter originally from a guy who looked into basically, first half of the season, we outran all of our opponents. We covered more ground and we had a higher average speed. Doesn't sound that significant, really. But you look at the second half of the season, we're doing just about the same levels, but everyone else has started covering more ground and has started getting faster. And that has basically meant in every single metric, expected goals against, average goals per game, average points per game, every single metric we're down now in the second half of the season because we simply aren't physically overpowering teams anymore. And they're finding it easy to play against, whether that's injuries, whether that's fatigue, whether that's because the players just simply don't want it as much as they did before. I don't know, but there's an interesting link there. And think, how do you figure that out? Well, you've got to adapt. We've got to do something because back-to-back draws at home against Sampdoria and Udinese and a Napoli defeat, it's not good enough. I worry unless Pioli can turn this round in the next couple of games. I'm not sacking there, by the way. I'm just saying that show us something, you know? Show us something. You think about the Fiorentina game, for example. It was a good game. We won 3-2. We were all buzzing afterwards. But now I think back to it, it wasn't perfect by any means.
No, I wasn't buzzing at all, actually. That was a terrible game. Well, I mean, it was our first game all season in the league where we've come back from a losing position to win a game. Our first one. I mean, that should tell you how I felt as soon as we conceded yesterday. I just knew. I was like, all right, here we go. It's over. You know, I was shocked we even got a draw. Yeah.
I don't think the crisis ended against Fiorentina, I'll be totally honest. You know, they're a bad team, and Sampdoria are also pretty well, they're better than Fiorentina, to be totally honest with you. But still, we've got to be beating those if we're serious. And all of this makes you think, right? So, halfway point of the season, we've won the winter Scudetto, which isn't anything. We're top at the halfway point of the season. We've won our Europa League group. We're obviously still in the Coppa Italia. You fast forward to where we are now. We've lost home games against Juve, Atalanta, Inter and Napoli, drawn against Udinese and Sampdoria. We lost a game against Spezia away that was absolutely awful. We got dumped out of the Europa League in the round of 32 stage. 16. No, round of 16 stage. And we got beat in the Coppa Italia by Inter. So what was a really, really exciting season for us because of a combination of things is now going to turn into quite a forgettable one. And that's like a pretty painful note. Blame what you want, but you can see why so many fans now are just sort of saying, get this over with, you know? I wonder what happened. I wonder what happens if we get in. Let's say we squeak in fourth or we finish third or we finish second. If we don't end the season with any momentum whatsoever, it's going to be a tough sell then over the summer. You know, there's not going to be, we'll be excited that we've got the Champions League back, but none of us will expect to do anything in it.
No, but do you almost think that no matter what, Pioli's job is going to be in question?
Yeah, but I don't think you could fire the coach that gets you back to Champions League after like a 7-year absence or whatever it's been. Like,
I think you can.
I'm sure you can. But
you do it if you think that the guy to take you to the next level is, if Pioli was the transition manager who's going to get you in top four, and the guy that you think is going to take you from top four to serious title challenger is out there, then maybe you go for it. Whether that's an Allegri, I doubt that. Or someone.
You'd have to get him lined up, though. You'd have to have him lined up already. You can't just sack him and then be like, okay, we're going to look for a serious manager now. You know, like, we'd have to already have serious contacts with an Allegri. or any, I don't even know who else is available right now.
Sarri, I mean, I
but is that the right move? Sarri, I would stay away too. I mean, that's another rebuild. That's an entire another rebuild. With the, we don't have the players for his system anyway. It's like it, that would take too long. We'd start the season shit. We'd want him sacked by game 11, game 12, and it we'd be all over the place again. You know, I think any manager you give consistency to after 4 or 5 seasons is going to be able to have something solid built. The problem is a club with of our stature, you don't get that kind of time. It's either succeed or don't. And that hurts us in the long run when we don't succeed, because then we restart and we restart. But I mean, that's the only way to find consistency is you look at Tottenham under Pochettino. I don't know how long he was there. It was like 7 or 8 seasons, but they weren't a good team. And then he got into a Champions League final because he had consistency. He had his core. He knew his system. He made it work. Obviously, he's gone now, but you look at Mourinho. Yeah, Klopp's another example.
Klopp's
another
a good example. He finished
shit with them. And then all of a sudden, he did.
And now
it's frustrating.
We don't have Van Dijk.
That's more injury crisis than anything.
They're collapsing.
Well, that's an interesting point, though, because Klopp, you know, won the league at a canter, and their drop-off has been absolutely massive this season because of injuries. So then you think, well, if Jurgen Klopp can't manage an injury, how do you expect Pioli to do it? I think the manager, I do think the mould of manager that Elliot would look for, because let's face it, it ain't just a Paolo Maldini decision. But the manager that I think they look for to succeed Pioli, because that will become a thing at some point, you know, he ain't going to be around forever, would have been someone like Marco Rose, who's actually going to Dortmund from Mönchengladbach, but like a young manager who plays exciting, progressive football, is good, developing young players, has Champions League experience. You know, he got through that group into this season, and they played some really good stuff. Obviously, he's going to, but I'm just saying, someone of that kind of mold is probably the guy they're going to see right for the project. But who knows? Like maybe Pioli, maybe Pioli gets us into the top four, and then he's judged on his results in the Champions League next season. And he manages to channel some kind of spirit, reverses the voodoo spell that Lukaku's put on us, and actually do quite well and randomly go deep into the competition. I don't know, there's a lot of intangibles at play, but...
you know, there's a manager out there named Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, you keep mentioning him.
It coaches Red Bull Salzburg. He's an exciting young coach, and he's an American. Imagine America taking us to the glory.
Red Bull Salzburg.
I don't even want to be on Twitter if we get an American manager. I'll be excited, but jeez.
I would like Nagelsmann, but I don't think that's happening. No. But this is the mold. Like, if we're going to try and play a high intensity, people say, why didn't we just get Ranić then? But I think it was the right decision not blow everything up, and we had things going so well. But will there become a point this summer where people say, do you know what, now's the time to go all in rather than just try and shithouse our way through another season where we're not really changing?
I don't know if this management team wants to go all in, though. They're trying to do it financially smart, and going all in is not financially smart.
I mean, yes and no. Like, you got to take the gamble sometimes, you know? Like, the prize money for glory is obviously going to be more beneficial than just skating by, you know? And if we get that four, it's like this summer window is so important, especially if FFP restrictions are kind of taken back a bit. Like, we got to make a statement. And I don't know if 40-year-old Latin's the guy to do it, you know? All he was saying prior to this, Duncan Castle or whomever was saying, we might be in for Aguero. I think it's horseshit, to be honest. But if we are, like, that's a move. That's a statement. I think he wants to stay in the Premier League. He probably goes to Chelsea, but that's besides the point. We got to make a move like that, and we got to reinforce, because we're not going to continue what we built if we don't improve on it. You know, the same squad next season, we're finishing 7th if we don't make any changes.
I think it also will show when these players, if we make Champions League, are going to start asking for more money, like Kessié. He wants more than our salary cap that we put in place.
And are we going to pay it? You know?
Yeah, for sure. Are we going to pay it? Or are we going to be like, sorry, man, this is the most we can offer you. Yeah. Go find more money elsewhere. No, we better fucking pay it, because if you want to compete in Champions League, you can't pay your players 3 million euros a season.
Right. Yeah. You can go to any other Champions League club and get, you know, double that. So why would you go to Milan? You know. Yeah. I'm right there with you. We've talked about it so many times, like developing these young players on low wages. You know, but what happens when they become that world class player you're hoping they become? You take the gamble. Now you got to pay for it. So it's a double edged sword. Either you go all in, invest in the big names like we did with Zlatan, get instant success like we had, or you get the young kids and hope to develop them over a few years and you take the backseat a little bit. But like, what's more valuable to you? Winning a trophy right away, getting that prize money with the big names, you know, selling more jerseys, whatever. Your marketability is huge. You look at the impact Zlatan's had in North America for Milan becoming the most popular team or whatever that survey said. Like, that wouldn't have happened if we went with Ranić and got some fucking bum from Celtic who might be potential, you know. Like, it's just not how it works. So you got to go for the names. That's the only way we're going to improve.
The thing about the wage bill, and there was a good feature on Milan News about it. A high wage bill isn't necessarily, or a higher wage bill isn't necessarily a bad thing. Now, there's been a massive emphasis placed on lowering our wage bill. The reason for that is because we were paying 50 million out of the 150 million to players on shit contracts who were offering nothing to us. And we managed to get it down. And we've done a fantastic job of that. So now you're down our wage bill and you think, yeah, there's some good contracts there. You know, we're not really overpaying anybody. And there's enough room to make some exceptions to keep the really big names. But then, as AJ touched on, with Elliot's project, is what happens when it works? What happens when those players become really good players and they start demanding the money of being a really good player and one of the best in the league in their position? Either we pay it or we lose them. And there's going to come a point where we know how serious and ambitious Elliot are. And it will come from the renewals of the likes of Kessier and other renewals that we'll have to tackle. Even the Donnarumma one is kind of that, but I actually back us standing firm on that because, you know, we made a rub for our own back by giving him 6 million a year as an 18-year-old, to be totally honest. It was only ever going to go up from there, and now it's like, wow, we're paying a goalkeeper 8 million a year. But anyway, and yeah, we'll see where exactly we're headed with how these renewals are handled. And if we manage to keep our core intact and we commit to paying them what they're worth, and then we build around it, then I think, you know, we're good to go. But
yeah,
if
just
big
to put
offers,
perspective, go ahead.
If big offers start coming in for these players and we don't really back ourselves to renew them, so we sell to get some money in and make a profit, we'll know that that's what it's all about. You know, they want to become another Dortmund, they want to become a Leipzig, just like a development ground for players, and then bring in more and develop them. And I hope it's not that.
Yeah. Just to kind of give perspective to how like the Donnarumma saga goes, you know, we're dealing with Mino Raiola. We all know like, oh, he's a tough negotiator, blah, 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 all this stuff. But like to really look at it, there were reports that came out today about Erling Haaland and his negotiations. And they're demanding 30 million a year for him, which, you know, that's his salary, whatever. But so just cut these numbers in a third for Donnarumma to get 10. Then Mina wants 20 million himself just for agent fees. And then an additional 20 million for Erling Haaland's father, which like irrelevant to the whole career, you know, like sure. He was a footballer
like, himself.
Yeah. Congrats.
So like, he doesn't need like, that money. He played for Man City.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like there's no relevancy there. Besides
he played for Man City when they were shit though.
Yeah. He
doesn't mean he has money.
Still a big club, though.
But what I'm saying is, like, they're looking at, Haaland for 30 mil, but it's really, they're asking for 70 mil for that, you know, plus the transfer fee of 150 or whatever it is.
Did you
look at Donnarumma, who's not transferring, you know? I didn't add that up. Is that it? No, that's right. 2020.
No, that's right. I'm just trying to add up how much the entire thing would cost. So you've got 150 mil.
Quarter of a billion, just about, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
no, it's half million. Yeah. That is mental.
So you look at Donnarumma now, who doesn't have the transfer fee of 150. So there's wiggle room for Mino to be like, I want 30 million in agent fees for myself, 10 mil on the salary. You got to renew Antonio Donnarumma. Like, you know, at Mino, right? Or, you know, Mirabelli made a big deal about I didn't pay Mino any agent fees. It's like, yeah, you didn't for Gigio's renewal, but you were forced to sign his shitty brother and you were forced to pay agent fees on that. So it's like, who really won? It wasn't us. So,
and also, you're forced to
give
Gigi 6 million a year as an 18-year-old. And that has shafted us a bit. That really has.
I mean, luckily he still performed. You give me $6 million as an 18-year-old. By 19, I'm a bum. You know, I'm spending my money and I'm gone. Like, yeah, I'm out. So
how many players that's been the case with a lot of players as well, let's be honest. So
that China money. Yeah. Very few players have gone to China, made their $40 million, and then just like left. You know,
it almost looks weird when those players go to Chelsea and go to China and try hard. Like Oscar went there and absolutely ripped it up, and everyone looked at him like, "What are you doing? Why are you trying? You know, why don't you just get your
Paulinho?"
Money? And
then he got a loan to Barca.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, God, that was mad. But then players
have
gone there
like Hulk. What has he done since? Nothing. They're just getting a little chunky, you know?
Arnautovic left West Ham when he was in his prime, and I thought he was a good player. Went to China and just didn't even really try. Obviously, El Shaarawy went out there and desperately wanted to come back. So it didn't always work for players to go out there and chase.
Oscar went out there as well.
Yeah.
Wonder what he's doing.
Right. Parma preview. We've got another Saturday game, but thankfully this time it's Saturday evening in Italian time. It'll still be morning for you, I would imagine. This should be a bit easier than Sampdoria. And I say that apprehensively because Parma are fighting for their lives, but they have been utter dog shit this season. Parma.
Yeah, but
and I didn't expect
go. We didn't win the
That's
reverse
true.
Fixture.
That's so. True. That was a damaging one, but they had a bad start to the season. They won one out of the first eight games, and they haven't really recovered since then. I didn't see it coming because last season they came up and stabilised and had a good finish, and I didn't think they'd regress as much as this. But they're struggling. They've been in the bottom three now since the 16th round of the season. They've got a negative 28 goal difference. They've won 3 out of 29 games all season. And one of those was against Roma, actually, 3 games ago. So God bless them for that. But they are struggling. They are struggling. They brought back De Versa, the manager. And even he hasn't really been able to turn this around. They drew 2-2 with Benevento in the last game. They could have really done with winning that game. And before that, they lost at home to Genoa, and that was pretty damaging. The bottom line is this is a game that on paper Milan should win, but the way things have been going recently, it probably isn't going to be an easy one. However, I actually prefer the fact that we're away from home for this one. You know, I think it'd be quite easy for them to say we'll take a point, come set up men behind the ball, but because they're at home, because they need the points, they're going to have to come at us, and that might play into our hands a bit. So I am going to predict a win, and I'm going to predict a 2-1 win. But I'm scared.
I'm just laughing because at the beginning of the season, we're like, we're going to win. Now it's like, oh, shit, do you think we're going to actually win?
Yeah, the narrative's changed.
I was also going to say 2-1 win because I'm not going to predict a loss. That's silly. Against
I'm going to go big and say 4-0 win.
I think you're crazy.
I hope you're right, man. I hope you're right.
That would be fantastic. I just don't see. I don't know. Yeah. We got a lot of adjustments to make.
If we win by 3 goals or more, Maddie, you can host the podcast for the rest of the season.
Oh, Lucas will love that.
It'd just be nice to win because we've got this thing now where we basically play only on weekends. So we should be able to rest up and get players back. You know, hopefully Liao won't be far away.
We have a couple of Wednesday and Monday games actually for the rest of the season.
Yeah, but for the next two weeks, if you know what I mean, we play Saturday, Sunday. So we've got, you know, a nice gap between the games to recover some players and hopefully things are looking better and brighter.
We have three midweek games left of the season. The rest are on a Saturday or Sunday.
Do you know, I think we were better when we were playing every midweek because we never lost.
I think we were as well.
Other teams were knackered and we were finding a way to outrun them, as that thing mentioned earlier. The study showed that we were outrunning literally every opponent we had, and now
until
our levels have stayed the same. Yeah, our levels have stayed the same, but actually other teams are now running more and we haven't been able to cope with it. Questions? So from Sagar, we talked about this a bit, but there's been a couple of new links. If you're signing a right winger and a striker in the summer, realistic targets, who would you want?
I guess Orsolini is kind of the name right now for right wing. If Talvin's not happening anymore, Orsolini is the next best, I suppose. Kind of touched on it earlier. I don't think we should go for a wing. You know, I think we should adapt to a two-striker formation, sack off the wings, get rid of them, because if Castillo's the level that we're getting, like, it's not even worth having a winger. We're already playing down a man when he's on the pitch anyway, so might as well find a position that he doesn't fit or formation doesn't fit.
Where would you put Liao?
Second striker.
See, I would sign Aguero on a free and then Belotti. So we have them two, who you know are both going to score goals.
Yeah.
But Belotti can cover for Aguero when he's injured. Because you know Aguero is like Zlatan. Yeah. He's old and he's made of glass.
Yeah, he is.
So
I would definitely pick up Belotti if Torino get relegated. Because then you know he's going for 10 million max. You know, and at that point, it's like even I can't deny that's a good deal. So I would
he's
do it if they
been a proven goal scorer his like the last 4 or 5 years, I feel like. So there's no wrong going.
He has Belotti, despite Torino having some shit teams in that stretch, has scored double figures goals in the league for 6 seasons in a row now, every season like, since he's been in Serie A.
He's probably scored more goals himself than AC Milan has in the past 6 seasons.
There was one season, the season that Cairo apparently wanted 100. That's good. There was a season that Cairo apparently wanted 100 mil, and that was when he'd scored 26, I think, in the league.
Yeah,
and
that was when we had our biggest links with him, which is ridiculous.
That's when we started offering him.
We started throwing counterparts over him as part of this deal. Like, oh, you want? I can't remember who we offered. Niang. We were going to do like 50 mil plus Niang, and people were saying, right, so that's 40 mil then. that's pretty time. Man.
Where is Niang playing now?
He's in France.
I think he plays for Stade Rennais. Apparently he's still pretty shit. Striker, I'm convinced I want us to get Vlahovic. I think it's time that we make a statement. We go out and get who I think is going to be, and other people think this, you'd have to take my uninformed opinion, but he's going to be the next big thing in Serie A, you know, to score 13 goals. That's what he has so far. For a struggling side like Fiorentina, he's big, he's physically fits the system, or he can fit other systems as well. You know, Prandelli's coming and play a three at the back, so if we switch to that, he'd find a role there. I just really like him, and I think it's something that needs to be addressed with a long-term signing. And I don't necessarily think that, for example, bringing in an Aguero, while he would be great because he's a proven goal scorer, etc. You're bringing in another player on a big money contract that has no resale value at all, and it becomes getting back to the old traps that we got into, that got us into a mess in the first place. So I think follow the philosophy, sign players that are young, that are exciting, that we can develop, that fit our system that we want to play with moving forward. I don't think you can go wrong. So I like Vlahovic, and I still like the link with Ikone as a right winger. I think we need someone who has pace and power. And he's having a really good season for Lille. I know there is one guy who really disagrees with that. Ikone is mediocre. Well, he set up Lille winner last night and they beat PSG away to go top of the league again. So like he's doing the business in the games where it counts. And he had two really good games against us. So I'd go with him. Next question. Christian Espinosa, we kind of talked about this. Should we change our formation? My answer is not now. Don't think now unless something goes drastically wrong. But we should consider it in the summer.
I think you want to do it before it goes drastically wrong. So when it goes drastically wrong, it's already too late.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think there should be a spot in modern football for one set formation. You should be able to adapt and change your formation for whatever team you're facing. You know, every team's going to have their intricacies, and you have to be able to adapt to those. So I think we should have a whole list of formations that we could use and use properly to counter whichever opponent we're going up against. You know, each team's got their own thing. I don't know why we have to stick to one and just hope it works.
The counter argument to that, and I throw back to the Atalanta home game. We picked our starting 11 based on Atalanta and how they play, and it backfired massively because we played Mate as an attacking midfielder to give us more physicality in midfield. And it was, and I said after that, and a few of us said, we should have just picked a team on our strengths and tried to beat them at our game rather than overthinking it like Pioli did. Like, that's one of the things that you got massively wrong. If you're thinking about, oh, what's our opponent going to play like next week? We need to change formation to adapt to Genoa. And it's like, no, we should probably be.
He didn't change formation for that game. He changed personnel, and that's different. You know, if you're going to stick the same formation. You could see what he's
trying to do.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But if you're going to stick the same formation, then you stick to the players that are best for that. But if you're going to adapt to the other team, the players in the same formation change to match that team. I think those are two different things, but I get what you're saying. I don't know. Like, I would never choose Mate as an attacking midfielder, but I wouldn't have chosen him as an option for the team at all. So,
yeah, that's just true. I think there's also, like, a manager can be judged on their flexibility based on how they make changes during the game as well. Like, if the manager reads something's going wrong, like in the Atalanta game, we were getting absolutely pasted in the first half, to be able to just, at the click of fingers, just switch to a different system, something that's going to, you know, give us more outlets, allow us to just stabilise the game a bit, that's big. Instead, we just kept sleepwalking into this inevitable defeat, and that was when you realised maybe we're not as flexible as we thought we were.
Next week, even when you can identify the problem on the pitch, like if you could tell they're always attacking down this side with this move and this player, not every manager is going to be able to find a way to stop that, you know? So that's a big thing we got to find when we're looking for a new manager as well, is like, yeah, can you identify the problem and adapt? And not just, a lot of them are like, oh, this is what's going wrong, I couldn't figure it out, you know? It's like, well, that's the issue. So change it up.
Yeah. Next question from ARP. Is Calabria our most important player? Our record without him has been abysmal, and yet he is often overlooked. Also, has it been a mistake not to play Haugamore? So, a two-part question. Let Maddie go first.
I actually said to you guys this week that he is an underrated player, and while we're all putting Donnarumma up on the pedestal and trying to re-sign him to become a club legend, Calabria is going to become the club legend over Donnarumma.
I disagree with you.
You're here first on the Central Milan podcast.
They both do.
Yeah, but Maddie really did. And there wasn't even conversation going on in the chat. And I just like, get this thing that says Calabria is going to be a legend. And I was like, okay. Like, sounds good, bro.
I think I had a few too many that night. I think it was when I was in Florida. But
yeah. Calabria definitely is underrated. I think he had a poor season last year, and he's kind of grown into his own now, and he's been around long enough. So my only issue with that is like, homegrown talents are all capital gains when you sell them. So I don't look at homegrown players as like full careers anymore. It's rare that you see that. Like, obviously we're seeing it with Gigio and Messi's never left Barca, but it's rare that you get like that Maldini player to where they're going to stay at the same club their whole career in today's game. Now it's like, you got to worry about FFP. You can't do anything else. So if there's an opportunity to sell that homegrown player for a large amounts and get as much profit as you possibly can, clubs take it nowadays. And that's why we don't see it as much. So do I think Calabria will stay forever and become a legend? Probably not, unless he doesn't perform as well as he should. I think if he overachieves.
I kind of disagree, because Milan is one of those clubs that has club legends. You know, West Ham doesn't have club legends.
I just don't know about him.
Because
club legend.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Not for the right nobody reasons. Knows because nobody wants him.
Yeah, right. You know, so like, I think it depends on the team. Like, Barca is still going to have players who come up through the academy, retire there, and are going to become legends. Real Madrid might. They just buy whoever the F they want. We are as well. We are going to have players who come up through the academy and who are going to stay until they retire, because that's like our grain work as a team. Like, that's who we are. That's how we've been successful. Go ahead.
Calabria thing is an interesting one, because Could he become a club legend? Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, he's come through the youth academy. He's got a number of appearances, and he's still only 24. And also, there's a bit of romance behind the story of he had a really bad year, and he's bounced back with a really good year. It's like he never gave up. He kept fighting, all that stuff. First of all, there's always going to be a limit, as we keep saying with Donnarumma, there's always going to be a limit to how effective a right-back can ever be. They're always scrutinised when they're bad and when they're good. Nobody really ever talks about fullbacks. That's just the way it is, unless you tell you when you're chipping in with goals that people aren't expecting. Calabria scores those as well.
He did have a great goal against Juve a few years ago.
Yeah, he scores stunners every once in a while.
Roma as well, that 2-0 win. That was a nice one. Calabria, yeah, he's one of the most important players in the team. I'm not going to say he's the most important, but he's definitely up there. It's all about, like, this 4-2-3-1, it's all about balance, and you need the right players down the flanks for it to work right. Without Calabria at right back, it doesn't seem to work right. That's just a fact. That's just the way it looks. And I really hope he comes back better from this knee injury, you know, and that it isn't the start of a larger problem, but it is just minor surgery, so touch wood, it'll be okay. And the how thing, yeah, we talked about it a little bit already, but hopefully he's had a bit of rest because he hasn't featured much in the last couple of months, so maybe that was like his resting up period, and now we're going to see a bit more of him. That's my hope anyway, and the goal certainly won't have hurt his chances. But yes, from here on in, we should see more of Hauge, definitely. If Rebic or Liao isn't fit enough to start on the left against Parma and Krunic starts there, then I'll be really angry.
Yeah, I was going to say, after Krunic's goal, Pioli gave him a lot of trust. So after Hauge's goal, he better get a lot of fucking trust.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. Next question. From Ulil, what's wrong with Milan in the final third, and how important is the number 10 role for Pioli's formation, and who should Hakan's deputy be? So there's three questions kind of rolled into one there. The number 10 role is important, definitely. A lot of our creativity goes through there. We saw when Hakan was on form that everything was going through him. He was getting goals, assists in batches, and without him on top form, everything just looks a bit more, you know, toothless. Like we don't have the threat anymore, especially without anything coming from out wide. So yeah, very important to the system. I would like us to sign. I'm not bothered about Brahim Diaz staying for another year on loan, to be honest. Having thought about it, I think we need to sign somebody who is our player. You know, even if Brahim had an option to buy included, I don't know if he's ever gonna really get going in Italy with Serie A like he might do if he went back to La Liga, you know, where having a small physical frame but being very good technically is probably encouraged, rather than here where sometimes he can just be anonymous because he gets overcrowded and all that. So the guy that we've been linked with quite a lot recently is Vlasic from CSKA Moscow. Now, totally understand if people don't know who he is and aren't excited about that, but he is good, and I would like that. But the problem then is we'd have Ibrahimovic, Rebic, Mandzukic, Vlasic, Krunic, maybe Vlahovic. So we'd have plenty of itches to scratch. I just added that last bit on. Yeah, but he's good, he's Vlasic, so I would see him as deputy.
So I think the first part was, you know, what's the issue in the final third? I think the obvious answer is not scoring goals. I mean, that's your issue in the final third. Either you score or you don't. A deputy, I think we were linked with, was it Zakanya? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a good shout. I like him. I think he's physical enough to do exactly what Ollie just said. So that would be a good shout there. And how important is the 10 role? I think it's one of the most important positions in the game, especially in a system like ours. You know, you don't have a 4-2-3-1 and not rely on a number 10. So, and if we switch to a 4-3-1-2, that number 10 is still extremely important. So that's the top position for me.
Ask the question one more time. I completely missed it.
what's wrong with Milan in the final third?
I think everyone's scared to say it, but it's Ibrahimovic. I don't know. I mean,
you're bold.
He's supposed to be the guy who's supposed to score all the goals. He scored 15 this season in the first half. He did get us up the top of the table. But since then, he hasn't done anything, and now we're starting to fall down the table. Just wait. We're going to fall more. Oh, now he's sitting off sides, so he's still injured. True. He isn't even on the field because he's not doing anything. Yeah. He did almost assist the winning goal on Saturday morning if Kessier did not hit the post, but he did, so no one's going to remember that. So the issue is Ibrahimovic and him being offsides and not really helping connect the play much.
Hakan's role, how important is it, and who would you like to arrive as a deputy?
To Hakan? I have no idea. Whoever you guys said. I don't know much outside of AC Milan. I'm not going to lie to you. Know, I'm not going to start saying people's names. I hear he's trying to... Never mind, I'm not going to say it.
What? That's not true.
Jennifer Rodriguez.
No, it's not true.
Yeah.
A couple days later, Everton posted a picture of him during training and his pants all like hiked up, you know, because they obviously heard the rumors as well, and they're like, "Nah,
that's fantastic. I'm
he's
sure
still all here."
Still got it. The final third thing as well. I noticed yesterday we were getting the ball on the edge of the box and just not shooting at all. It's like we were trying to walk the ball into the net. So I would say that we should probably shoot more when we have good opportunities to do
so. Yeah, it's almost like we're looking for the perfect goal, you know.
Oh, and another thing yesterday that pissed me off, that was a 50-50. I'd say probably was actually a penalty on Ibra because he was getting to the ball first. Yeah. It's not a massively controversial Stonewall penalty, but I think the pundits agreed that it was probably one of those that you see given. And if we hadn't have been given many as we have this season, perhaps it does get given. But anyway, whatever. And Rebic, the one where Hauge put the ball through to him and he slotted it under the keeper, and it got cleared off the line pretty much. He should have just gone down. Like, he was getting ragged over as he took the shot. He should have just not bothered shooting and just a Stonewall penalty. But, you know.
I don't even know if he shot. I think he tried to cross it to his left.
I think it was,
to be honest.
Oh, he tried to, like, he did something. Anyway.
Yeah, I think he tried to just put it across the face of the goal. But, yeah, as far as the penalty shot, I agree. I think that if it's outside the box, it's a free kick 100% of the time. And inside the box, it's 50-50, you know. I don't know. I lean towards the penalty, but I also wasn't, like, livid that it wasn't given.
I said at the time
because it was an early game and I anticipated it.
I thought he was looking for it as well, which doesn't help, you know, when he's clearly fallen over under the contact rather than actually try to.
And that's the issue with having so many penalties in the season and people complaining about it is now refs are like, all right, let's see, are they just trying to pull any little contact, and so they start to lean against it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But
unless you're Juve.
Yeah, well, even they're struggling, man. Chibuso asked, what do you think about bringing Conte and Laxalt back as backups to Calabria and Teo? No.
I don't think about that. I don't think about it at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's not really for me, that one. Although, I think we are going to face a bit of a dilemma with these loan players that are returning. Like, if Atalanta don't decide to redeem Caldara, what the hell do we do with him? Because that was supposed to be a guaranteed 15 million coming in for us, you know.
We sell Romagnoli. Now Caldara is a fourth choice behind Tomori and Gabbia here.
They honestly might actually do okay. And then who else? Laxalt, sell. You know, obviously, if we get a few million for him and just make our money back, sell. That's good.
Is Celtic not interested in keeping him? I thought they were.
Mixed reports. Some say they are, some say they're not. I guess the last few games will be decisive. Conte will go to Parma if they manage to stay up, so I think we should throw the game on Saturday to give ourselves a better chance of getting the 8 million from him going.
That's how much we're going to get is 8 million?
Mm. That's actually a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, not compared to what we
paid
for. I was
going to say, just let him go for free, man. He's not worth anything, but they're going to give us 8 million. Shit.
Right, that's one more question because I'd feel bad if I didn't ask this. YM Guna, it's unpopular, but is it really a nightmare scenario if Donnarumma and Calhanoglu leave for free? With Champions League money, we'd have money, and their new contract alone would be more expensive than signing replacements on cheaper deals.
No, I'm I don't think it's a nightmare. I think no, let Hakan go, honestly. Are we talking? Who's talking? Let Hakan go. I'm okay with him leaving as long as we switch to, like I said, a 4-3-1-2. Then we have other players we could put down the hole, even Trialy out there and Rebic and Zlatan up top or whatever you want to do. There's ways to work around it, and that frees up money to sign, you know, that second striker we want if his contract's gone. Donnarumma a bit more so, just because you could get a lot of money to sell him. So if he decides he's not going to go, I think we could reach like a gentleman's agreement of like 6 months renewal, same wage, whatever, and we'll sell you this summer. I think if we can't come to an agreement on a new long-term deal, then that would be the way to go, because he's worth a lot of money. We could get good money.
Yeah, I won't be – I would be upset if he left on a free, but I'm almost like re-sign him and then sell him, because he – at this point, he's got a big head, and his either him or his agent think that he's bigger than the club, and no player is bigger than the club. Like, that's just the way it is, you know. And if this is how renegotiations are going to go every 4 or 5 years, you can't hold the club up and be like, hey, this is what I want, and wait till the last minute. Like, no. If you want to be the captain, this is not how you act. You say that you want to sign a contract, so tell your agent to stop being a fat, greedy man with greasy fingers and sign the contract. That's all.
Yeah,
Hakan can go for free. I don't really care about him. I like him, but
thinking about
you shouldn't leave. Let any player leave for free, in my opinion. But like, if he left, I'm not going to miss him.
Mm-hmm. It's hard with Donnarumma. You know, he has a huge, huge value. So we need to find a way to renew him and sell him. Like, if that's it, if he didn't have a long term.
The problem with selling him, though, like every big club that could afford him has a long term keeper. The only way a big club picks him up is if it's on a free, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
And that's why we have the upper hand right now. And I think we just put something out this morning that we're going to offer him a 2-year deal at $7 million, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's like we're renegiating next season, though. You know, that's
fine though.
Everyone's thinking a 2-year renewal means, oh well, we're definitely going to sell because he ain't going to be here long term. Not necessarily true. We might just see where we are in 12 months. If we've made the Champions League again, we'll have the money to offer that little bit more and finally get him. It's all about, like, I think Raiola actually is one of the few agents who gives a shit about the project that the young players that he has are involved in. He wants them to be in competitive teams to obviously drive up value. And that's always been his stance with Donnarumma. He's been waiting to see if we have a serious project or not. And if we've got another year of Champions League under our belts by then we might be in a stronger negotiating position second time around. But Raiola's no doubt looking at the chaos that's unfolding at Milan at the moment and thinking, I'm not sure about signing my client up for 5 more years of that. So
the only team I would be upset if he went to is Juve. And Inter. I guess any – yeah. But, like, if he leaves, he better go outside of Italy, not
– I think he would. I think it would be PSG. I'm looking and thinking there ain't much of a market at the moment for a goalkeeper who's going to be paid that much. And obviously even PSG have Navas and stuff, but he's 35, I guess. Yeah, weeks go by and we don't seem to be getting any closer, but I'm sure that, you know, there's going to be a moment where everything just kind of clicks and we know either way, and that's going to be a very interesting day. Yeah, that's it then, lads. Thank you if you made it this far. I realise we've done quite a long one this time. But we'll be back next week to recap the Parma game and preview whatever the game is after that. Sassuolo at home, I think. And I've been your host, Ollie Fiji. What?
I said, fuck, we're going to lose that one.
Sassuolo, yeah, no, they're a great side. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter, the handle at the bottom of the screen, or at Ollie Fisher, if you're listening. And I've been joined by Anthony Talgrid.
Yeah, it was a good one, a lot of fun. Let us know if you like this new format and if we should keep it or go back to the other one. We'll do what you want. You're in charge, so... Yeah, find me on Twitter right there. I'm at Twitter45 if you're listening.
Yeah. Every time before we record, Oliver goes, God, it's gonna be a quick episode. And we're both like, no, it's not. You're going to start talking. And it was a good episode, though. You guys can go ahead and find me on Twitter at Madison, or it's right in front of my face, and I said it wrong. Edward _Doth.
There we go. Yeah, you guys, it's been a long one. Yeah, thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you in a week's time.
Andrea Conti, bella palla per Rebic. Rebic Ibra. Rebic. 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 Il tiro. Goal!